Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Jennifer McPherson. Jennifer McPherson is a founding editor of the Comstock Review. Her work has been published widely in such journals as Poet Lore, The MacGuffin, Calyx, Pearl, The Connecticut Review, Louisiana Literature, South Carolina Review, and Primavera. She is the author of a 2002 chapbook entitled Stuck in Time from Pudding House, which also published her greatest hits in 2001. A Nickel Tour of the Soul was published by Foothills in 2004, and In the Mixed Gender of the Sea, published by Spire in 2004, won the Spire Press Poetry Book Award. Her new book, entitled Rosary of Bones, was just released by Cherry Grove Press in 2007. Hi, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm fine, Jan.
It's great to have you here. And you're going to start with some poems from Rosary of Bones.
Yes, I am. Every rosary begins with a creed. I have one here called Credo. I believe in the testament of bones, their tensile strength. Little girls jumping rope, boys with hockey sticks, leap moons every day. They whirl like planets, and their bones turn the wheel of the universe. I believe in the torso, ankles, spine, and those small sticky ribs. I rejoice in my bones each morning, rise from bed on legs that hold me straight, walk me to the kitchen. I lift my coffee cup with a slender filigree of fingers. My hat fits my skull, and I dare the world with my chin. At night, my bones retract into a thin skin of dreams. These too, I believe. An undercut of sorrow runs beneath. I accept the slow dissolve into mineral. I touch my knees, my breastbone, feel the outward scars, believe that mysteries are happening deeper than skin. So soon bones diminish and fall away. I believe nothing is wasted. Calcium crumble, grate of shale, arrowheads once lost, now found. Even shiny leaves, the pointed blades of grass, everything that has moved in the rain. This book was built upon, I could say, be a little bit punny here and say, a skeleton of poems dealing with bones, and the other poems sort of weave around that theme. The first of the bone poems, which probably dates a good 10 or 12 years ago, I will read you. This poem's had an interesting history after it was published, in that the Jesuits at Le Moyne College hung it on the bulletin board of their residence, and it found its way into the preface of a medical journal. So it's gotten a few strange bedfellows. The Bone Poem. Bones waken me to midnight's open silence with their ghostly ache. Suggest that it's time to bargain again with God. Not the God of meek and gentle heart who rises perfect each spring, but an older, arthritic God who knows about bones, notes the hour when they begin to slowly grind each other, when skin thins and they stand like so many knobby sentinels. This God counts poems we have yet to write, like a rosary of bones clicking through his gnarled fingers, naming each one as it begins to split. Tibia, fibula, radius, ulna. Older than benevolence, is this the God who shatters stone in rage, who makes seas swallow regiments, whose own bones mutter when he leans to listen? Physical examination. This is a bit lighter on the side of bones. Physical examination. There is a gumball machine in my head and a jukebox stuck on Light My Fire. My feet try to hurry, stuck in their snowshoes. The bear in me demands to be filled. Freezer burn scars my toes, but my wrists are catalogs of hope. I could see sleep in anyone's eyes. I could feel love in the shape of a skull. Come to think of it, that isn't so light, is it?
No, it's not.
Photo found caught in the back of a drawer. And this is a true story. Most of my poems have a good amount of fiction in them, but this one is actually true. Photo found caught in the back of a drawer. My parents hold hands as they stand by the garden riotous with vegetables. It is 1942, and my mother looks like the pictures of war brides you see in old magazines. Sure of herself, sure of her husband, their future already planned in detail, if not in the eye of God. My father stands over her. She is a bean to his zucchini. His smile tears holes in my heart, but his ensign's cap casts a shadow across his face. His uniform, as white as the tombstones, marching across an Arlington lawn.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Jennifer McPherson. And she's reading from her new book, which is entitled Rosary of Bones, published by Cherry Grove Press. Jennifer, I want to ask you about these lighthearted poems about bones and skulls. And there's a terrific voice in these poems and a power of statement that makes us pay attention. I like the certainty in the voice about things that we really seemingly can't be certain about. Is it? I know that you have a background in your life as a school psychologist, and is it true that you went to? Do I have this right that you went to the seminary in Wyoming? Is that true?
No,
did I make that up?
I went to Wyoming Seminary.
Oh.
But what it is, it's a preparatory school in Kingston, Pennsylvania. It's in the Wyoming Valley.
Oh.
And that has always thrown people.
Okay.
Yes.
Because that seemed wild. Okay. But, you know, it leads me to this question about a fascination that rises from your poems with things of other worlds or the connection of, you know, it seems like bones are connections between this world and another. Can you talk about that fascination, which just seems to, is everywhere in this book?
When I looked at this book as it formed, I saw that what I was really doing was putting together my own development of how I see life on Earth, and it was a coming to terms with the things that I hated: aging, the fact that we don't have any certainties.
Mm-hmm.
The only things that I guess we can be certain of are the really basic, pulled down to its simplest essence of the body,
mm-hmm.
and the spirit that dwells therein. And that's dealing, to my mind, is dealing with the bones.
Mm-hmm.
So the bones are the body end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a little bit off that, but I was a little bit amused. I didn't see what they put on the back of my book till after it was all done.
Mm-hmm.
And I read the first sentence at the top of it about what the book was about. And it's not about that at all. In fact, it's a total negation of what the book is about. And I thought, I wonder if I did a good job on explaining putting this together. But everybody else gets it. So I figure.
Do you want to read that sentence or not?
Yeah, it says, in Rosary of Bones, Jennifer McPherson confronts silence and evanescence and finds what endures, the body, the physical world, in all their music and solidity. Mm-hmm. Now, since for me, I'm more or less feel that this is a book of coming to terms with the fact that the bones in the physical world are not all there is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay that we're going to not always have it.
Right.
That's okay.
Right.
So somehow finding that that's was a little bit misinterpreted was a shock. But as I said, I figure most people will not hang their hat on that sentence.
Well, that's Marie Howe talking there.
No, that's not Marie
Howe.
That's
not Marie Howe?
No, Marie Howe's got quotes around what she said.
Oh, okay, I see.
That was what the publisher
said.
That's
the publisher speaking.
And you are the second person who thought that. So
interesting.
Yeah, that it was Marie Howe saying that.
Interesting. So that sort of brings up the question or another certainty, which is that readers and people in the world will take our poems and do what they wish with them and project onto them and also, you know, join with our poems and see what they will. And that's part of what happens with reading and writing. I mean, how do you feel about that as a writer?
Well, I think it's wonderful. I love the fact that I have no idea where these little seeds will go. And, you know, I've had people later tell me that certain poems caused them to make life changes that were very significant. And sometimes they tell me what they did and what the poem was, and I'd be scratching my head for the next, you know, until I forgot about it. Because I could see no connection. But to them, there was the connection, and that's all that counted.
Okay. Why don't you read more poems?
55th Birthday Blues. I am approaching the age of my mother's decline, when her veins and arteries shut down, when her legs couldn't take her more than a few steps, and she needed a pillow nearby. When the operations came closer and closer in time, and the doctor said he had no other cures. A decline not of bones, but of blood, the steady highways to and from the heart. Too much waiting for cars to start their journeys. Too many misplaced maps, broken watches, sticky surfaced roads. We must have explanations for what happens in our lives, or we would go mad. But I may be dwelling in a house with dry rot behind the clean, visible boards, and no explanation will heft fresh wood or make my house safe haven. The clocks on my walls have hands that sweep like my mother wielding a broom. 1951. This poem is about being small and powerless, holding dolls at night through our small sleep. In the classroom, we sit like mushrooms, rare and exotic. Some may fruit, some not. Doors to the cloakroom slam shut. Families leave town. Grade 3, fulcrum of childhood. Pigtails grow longer, reach for fingers to comb through their knots. How awful our terror when the teacher clears her throat. Desperation makes us wave these little hands. Everything we know spills from our lips. You can see what kind of a school I went to. One of the types of poems that I adore writing are ekphrastic poems. And a couple summers ago, I went through a series of writing poems to a lot of a lot of pictures. And this one is not a well-known painting. In fact, I'm not even sure of the name of it or the artist, but it was a famous poem in my house. Above the Dresser. Nana called it the Strawberry Girl. The painting hung in my mother's bedroom during her last painful year. The child wore a thick scowl, cherry lips turned down, eyes about to overflow like the berries falling from her basket. Her other hand gathered her pinafore together at the hem, brown curls a mass of discord. I saw no resemblance, but Nana claimed it exact replica of my mother, an obstinate, willful child who did not take well to obedient ways. This picture, symbol of the child lost within the adult frame, now shrinking. When I looked at the picture from that inspired the poem, I wrote the poem away from home. It was from memory that I wrote it. When I got home, I was shocked to see that wasn't really what the picture looked like. It was a cross between that picture and a picture in another room.
Mm-hmm.
And that I've thought that might make an interesting subject for a following poem about how I couldn't keep my picture straight. This is one of my longer poems. It's called Dinner for One, Philadelphia. I hate Chinese restaurants. They're Americanized, chop suey and chow mein food, weeping peanut oil, reeking of salts guaranteed to give you headache. Every shopping plaza, no matter how small, has such an eatery, and I avoid them all. But the Rodin Museum was closed, skies threatened rain, I was hungry, and this place looked different, better. The sign proclaimed longs, and a newspaper review plastered to the window promised Nouvelle Chinese cuisine. And the meal was memorable. Sweet and pungent soup thick with mushrooms, its broth clear and biting, giant prawns with sliced mango, baby ears of corn, asparagus cuts garnished with thin strips of deep-fried parsnip in a subtle pineapple sauce, plus a glass of good Merlot. A man and girl sat two tables away, her back to me. She had a broad New Jersey accent and deeply bronzed skin. The man was middle-aged in business suit and tie with harried frown. He talked about her mistakes at work, how to do better. I heard doctor-patient privilege and medical records and interns. She tried to justify herself, interrupting until he became frustrated, said she would never understand. She whined how she really wanted to hear everything he had to say, but he sighed, "This isn't about work. It's about you and me." And she accused him of involving Marla, and he snarled that Marla was none of her business and he was leaving, but she wailed that she hadn't any money, so he waited for the bill. Both of them utterly silent, his body half turned away in rejection. And I wanted to rush over and say, "Here, I'm a psychologist. Let's talk it over." Like I wanted to do that time at JFK when the young mother was beating her 5 tired and sleepy children with a belt and screaming at them not to cry, but I had to catch a plane for London and didn't intervene. Or the time in the emergency room when the little boy threw a tantrum and his mother complained that he never obeyed her, but I was called to have an x-ray taken of my battered ankle, so hadn't the time to tell her that consistency was the key. Consistency. You beat a kid and he cries. You ignore a kid and he does the forbidden. You ignore your dinner partner and she knows it's over. I left before their bill came, never saw them leave. If she said anything or he did, or how they slunk out of Long's into the Philadelphia dusk and the peaceful rain, drops falling one after another.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Jennifer McPherson, reading from her new book, Rosary of Bones. I wanted to ask you about your work on the Comstock Review. I know you are a founding editor of that literary magazine, and just how it has influenced your work as a writer, if there's some kind of crossover influence.
It's had two influences. One, the negative influence, is that I should spend working on my own work, I'm spending doing other things. The positive influence has been it's a real education in what's going on in the world of poetry today and in how to judge good and bad poetry when you're presented with huge mounds that you have to make decisions about.
Yeah. I'm sure listeners out there would be interested in, you know, how the barometers of how you make those decisions.
Well, we're a collective, mm-hmm. So it has never been my decision alone. At this point in time, I'm what is called a senior editor, which sort of means I'm a loose cannon. And so much of it is a matter of taste. All of the members of the editorial board are very experienced in their writing of poetry. Most of us are well published. We have our quota of MFAs and so forth. And because of that, everybody is bringing their own taste. And at this point, it seems to be a matter of what we feel really hits us in the gut. We want something that takes off the tops of the heads of the people who read it.
Mm-hmm. Like Emily Dickinson said.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
We would have published her.
Yeah. We don't have a lot of time, and I would like to hear a little more poetry. So maybe one or two more.
Okay. This is not a new unhappiness. It has followed me everywhere since the day we met. Sea lapping around our ankles, sun pulling at our ears. It whimpers underneath my pillow at midnight when moonlight seeps below the curtains of my room and crosses my face with stars. An animal I could pet if it were small enough, if it were starved. And I'd like to read also, I want to make sure to get this in there, is that the title poem of the book, which happens to be the last poem in the book. Rosary of Bones. Easy to praise when it's green and fresh and the air smells ironed. Easy to open hands, spill seeds, tamp soil, like my grandmother before me, who saw angels in the rain. Now that I have become my grandmother, I wrestle with weeds and words, fling the rake around. The world has evolved into a truly stubborn place, a curse of rocks to trip my feet. I haven't seen angels for years, and I need them in my garden, soil with its stony crop, worms among the roses. But here I count the bones that work, the springing summer hours. I give thanks for leaves, for autumn's bronze and winter's grace, snow's white confection erasing even as it is erased. This peace, this praise. Amen. I have a poem here. If you like Maine, this will appeal to you. Flying to Maine. One man cradles a salmon, rubs his bearded jaw as he bends and twists his way to a seat. Two solemn-faced women, obvious Mainers, navigate the narrow aisle. The third folds into a seat up front. The plane shimmies and jerks as we follow the evening tide to Rockland. Coffee spills down my open collar, the view all seawater and coves, eelgrass and marsh grass. We muster our way through fog into sky so big the airplane cannot contain it. Our hearts swing like lobster pots. The little boats are set to gather in. A few years ago, I went to New York City to accept the Spire Press Award. And this sort of tells about my emerging from the subway. Early April, Washington Heights. The rattle of trains gives way to brief hush. In front of me, two large green doors open into spring, into Bennett Park, for Scythia beginning to lean its golden fever over wrought iron railings. Students from Yeshiva hurry by, books balanced and heavy with learning. A few late lunchers bolster the benches, busy with salads or sandwiches, paperbacks half open. But the burgeoning flowers cannot be quieted in their seamless racket. Sidewalks blaze with children on red tricycles, babies in prams and strollers, mothers shrugging off their jackets, throats lifted to the sun.
It's the poetry of Jennifer McPherson. For ordering information on Rosary of Bones, go to cherry-grove.com. Thank you so much. It was great.
Thank you, Jan, for the opportunity to read. I enjoyed it very much.
Me too. You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineer is Joseph Wilk. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, independent public radio, 91.3 WYEP.